Hi, guys. My name is Jeff Platt. I am Hannah's president. Welcome to our Derby Day card conference call. With me on the panel are some horse players, Mike Maloney, Hannah's vice president, John Doyle, winner of the NHC tournament in 2011, and Bob Gregory, winner of the World Series of Handicapping Tournament this past January this year. Welcome, guys, and welcome, Hannah members. I guess the format of the call is simply going to be, we're not going to make picks per se. We're just going to look the races over and talk about anything related to the races. And we also are manning the war room at paceadvantage.com. We have a chat room on our website at horseplayersassociation.org. And we're manning the Hannah email inbox. And you guys that are listeners, feel free to submit questions at any time, and they'll feed questions to me, and I can ask your questions of the panelists. So with that said, let's begin. Let's jump in to Churchill Race 1. All right, I'll go first. Churchill Race 1. Post time is 10:30 in the morning Eastern. It's a mile and a 16th on the dirt track, and we had some weather this afternoon. And before we jump in and start talking about the races, I guess we should maybe mention the weather. They had a fairly nice thunderstorm that rolled through. Mike, you had some thoughts on what the track might play like tomorrow, given that there was a little bit of weather today.
Right. First of all, you know, I thought the outside part of the track, Jeff, was a little better than the rail today. It wasn't a severe bias, in my opinion, but I thought that especially from the 3/8 pole on in, you wanted to enter the stretch, you know, in the center of the track. It helped a little bit. Several horses that I thought were live underperformed by trying to run up the rail on the dirt track, trying to finish up the rail in the into the top of the lane and down the stretch. So that's one thing I wanted to throw out there. Biases are pretty subjective things, so, you know, everyone have their own opinion, but that was the way I viewed it. The track started out today. I don't have this confirmed from Churchill, but these are just my observations. The track started out today sealed and very tight, and with the anticipation that we might have some rain, track management was very concerned about, you know, getting moisture in the track and having to deal with that tomorrow. So the track was sealed for the early races. I think they opened it up later, and that's common at Churchill, is they will, on big days, on Oaks and Derby days, they will, if there's precipitation in the forecast, they will tighten the track down. They'll seal it or seal it to some degree. And then before the Oaks or before the Derby, they'll herald the track and open it back up. So you have to be careful about, you know, I'm always really conscious of how the track is playing each day and looking for a bias and trying to be conscious of that. But you have to be careful at Churchill about that on big days, because even if there is a significant bias, it may disappear when the track is opened up for the big race. So just things to be aware of. Now tomorrow, weather-wise, we're thinking that we'll have a 40% chance of rain in Louisville. I'm in Lexington right now. It's just drizzling just a little bit, but you know, we really don't know what exactly we'll get tomorrow at Churchill, but, you know, good chance that we'll get some rain at some point during the day.
Sure. Okay, we have our first question, believe it or not, and the question is, do pro players really look to days such as Derby Day as a serious betting opportunity? If so, is it pool size or is it the 20-horse field in the Derby that creates the appeal, or is it something like casual money in the pools that isn't there in the middle of the week on a typical card? What makes the Derby Day card attractive to us or to you guys?
Well, I can add this, John. I think it's a couple. I think you're right. I think it's the pool size. It's the casual fan, so, I mean, you're going to get your price. But it's also the quality of racing. Usually the undercard is high quality of horses and usually a good kind of puzzle for handicappers to kind of go attack because horses are coming from different venues and horses are being pointed to certain races. So, I mean, you know, for instance, there's a sprint. I think it's the Humana where you got Rafael Bayrano. I play the West Coast, right? I play Hollywood and San Anita. You got Rafael Bayrano and Joel Rosario who win every race there basically on 220-1 shot. So, I mean, it's that kind of you know, the quality, not just of the horses, but also the trainers and the jockeys that make it, you know, great. Now, it all depends on the field, though. Right? For instance, today I didn't like the card as much as I like it tomorrow. So it all still depends on who actually shows up and, you know, again, you know, how the races are configured and what's your strengths. And if it plays to my strengths or my weaknesses, you know, then I kind of I'll decide on, you know, how much you get involved.
I was going to say, for me, I've noticed over the years that there is a lot of casual money in the pools that isn't there. And a lot of the exotics pay a lot better than they do. When you combine the big fields and the casual money, it creates a combination that's attractive and worth going after. If you can just have the trifecta or the super in the Derby, it can really pay out. Where middle of the week, maybe a field of the same size, it doesn't pay out nearly as much. And I've got data going back years and years that bears that out.
One thing for me, Jeff, to address that real quick. Sorry, this is Mike. There's a unique circumstance that, you know, this weekend with the $1 minimum on the superfectas. So, you know, I'm a full-time pro and I focus on the Kentucky circuit and Keeneland and Churchill specifically. So it's a wonderful opportunity for me, as a horse player's advocate. I'm against it. I'm for 10-cent supers every day, every race, everywhere. But if Churchill chooses to do it this way, that's, you know, it's something that creates opportunities. If there are people out there that have the bankroll, that you can properly cover some of these superfecta races, there's great opportunity because there's a lot of money being played into the superfecta pools where people can't cover properly. If you're playing these tough races, if you're trying to play $20 or $50, you know, or maybe even $100 into those superfecta pools at a $1 minimum, you better be very, very good because chances are you can't cover that race properly. And, someone playing with a bigger bankroll can take advantage of that. So that's one opening they're giving you this weekend.
All right, this is Bob. I agree, Mike. There's a lot of recreational money on the whole card. And I'm embarrassed to say my last big score in the Derby was 10 years ago. But the thing is that War Emblem was 21-1, and I had the trifecta. And where else will you play where you handicap the winner and the trifecta pay 18 grand plus?
It's rare.
Very nice.
I didn't have War Emblem, by the way, even though I could kick myself afterwards. All right, looking at race one, anybody have any thoughts on this race? Or should we move on to a different race?
Hey Jeff, just so you know, this is John. I'm on the West Coast at 7:30, so I really kind of just so you know, I focused on the fourth race on the second pick four. So that's where my focus was.
Okay.
And I didn't really like much in these early races, so that's just me.
Yeah. I'm looking at this race, and I'm having trouble finding value here. My numbers kind of dovetail with what the morning line has. Holiday's Jewel is the morning line favorite. That's the top power numbers, the top early speed numbers that I use. So, I was going to look elsewhere for value. If I agree with the morning line odds maker, I pretty much turn the page and look for a race where I disagree with what everybody else has. So,
are we on race one, you said, Jeff?
Yeah, race one.
Well, okay.
If you have an opinion, speak up. Don't let me talk you out of it
Did you say, my race one at Churchill tomorrow has got the Attigan in it?
Yeah, he's a two-horse. Yes, correct.
You know what I'm doing?
Right.
Uh-huh. Bear with me. I am looking at today's race one.
But I can give you that winner.
All right, here I go. Okay, I'm looking at it right now. I was actually looking at the report for the wrong race, trying to multitask a little bit too much. Attigan, I agree with Attigan, but there again, 7-5 in the morning line?
Right.
Comes
out of the Arkansas Derby.
Yeah.
It's six-horse field, too. It's
One thing that I'll try to do, this is Mike, and one thing that I'll try to do in a race like this, in Kentucky you get a superfectas offered in six horse fields. And one thing that I'll try to do in a race like this is reverse handicap. Is I will say, like what jumps out at me in this race is that, yeah, it's a tough competitive race, but the four horse looks hopeless to me. So, now I'm down to five horses. If I can find one other opinion, which I haven't yet, I can't, I'm not ready to give out the cold super, but which I haven't yet, but I'm gonna put some time into this race and see if I can find, one other horse that has a reason not to perform tomorrow. And I may, if I can find that, then you have an opportunity to just play a cold number in the super where you're only using four horses in a four-horse bet. So, it doesn't cost much to play that way, and sometimes that's the easiest and most efficient way for me to play in a race that has evenly matched contenders, but then the non-contenders are separated by a wide margin. So, a thought that, you can use it in a lot of different venues, not just on Derby Day, but kind of a reverse way to find a wager. And maybe I'm looking too hard to find wagers, but, I do this on a regular basis, trying to find a horse or two to pitch in a short field like this and play into the super pool.
All right, we have a question, and I believe this question isn't just for this one race or any race in particular. It has to do with, and I'll just read it. You guys are insiders, and as insiders, you have inside info and access to clocker reports, and you hear inside scoop about workouts. Which horses on the card are on the muscle, or what have you heard, which horses have you heard good things about? If at any point in a race that we're discussing, if a horse fits that description, feel free to speak up. I don't see that in this first race myself.
Yeah, I don't have anything that would fit that in the first.
Me neither.
All right, so we'll just with that said, let's move on to race two. And this is a field of lightly raced horses, three-year-old and up maidens. I really don't have an opinion in this, guys. Do you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah, let me jump in here, Jeff. This
okay.
is Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to try to play into this race, and this is normally not a race, not the type of race that excites me. But what you'll find what I look for on Oaks and Derby Day and maiden special weight races at Churchill is that almost without exception, the races will be run very close to the par time. and many times above the par time. So in other words, it's usually run in a very fast time. You don't get many weak courses that win these type races. Everybody wants to win on Derby Day, and all the trainers do, all the owners do. So these races are usually loaded. As I look through this race, the horses that have started don't excite me. So I've done a little work on the pedigrees and the trainer profiles of the first-time starters, and I came up with two horses that, you know, that kind of excite me a little bit in here. One of them being the 4 Master Sip for Bob Hess, and the other being the 6 Hamiltonian for Larry Jones. Now, I know Larry Jones is not a prolific first-time out trainer. I'm aware of that, but this horse breezed at Keeneland over the Poly 3 weeks ago, a bullet 46 half mile out of the gate. Best out of 69 works at that distance that morning. And 5 days previous to that, he worked 58-2 out of the gate over the Poly. Now, since he went to Churchill, he's continued to work very well. And Larry's horses are running super today. So I've come up with a play there where I'm going to I think the 10 is the best of the horses that have started. So I'm going to go into the exacta box, 4, 6, 10, try to play a tri-box that same way, and then I'll play some superfectas maybe defensively in case someone may slip in third or fourth on me. But I think that is a playable race because I think the horses that have started just don't look good enough other than the 10. They don't look, you know, like, don't fit the normal profile of horses that win maiden special weight races on Derby or Oaks Day.
Interesting take. Yeah, that's something that I didn't even consider. I'll just admit that to everybody out there. I didn't even consider that you would get better horses on Derby Day, and it's so glaringly obvious what you just said. Appreciate that.
You know, I have no opinion, this is John. I have no real opinion. I defer to Mike on this, but one horse that I think might deserve at least inclusion in exotics would be the 5 Easy Vice. I just like the, you know, that first race, that was a monster race that horse won. Gets Lasix for the second start, you know, gets dirt. And, you know, he just had a pattern that we look at, you know, that for maidens where when the horse kind of actually finished, he actually finished good even though it doesn't look like it because he's 12 length, but that race is so fast. The winner ran a 97 buyer speed figure. And I just think just pattern-wise, this horse was able to at least relax a little bit early and then even finish up even though, again, it doesn't look like, you know, from the lengths behind. But, again, that race was real fast late. Gets Lasix. Don't know much about this trainer. It looks like just looking at the bottom of the form, it says, you know, maiden second, he's 1-for-1. But it might be a long shot for worth inclusion.
All right. Thanks, John. All right. There's nothing else for race 2. Let's jump ahead to race 3.
Well, let me kick it off. This race, I think you have 2 horses in here that are going to be part of the trifecta in my eyes anyway. The 5 Golden Ticket is proven over the Churchill Downs course, which the Churchill Downs main track is kind of a quirky course that not every track and then not every horse adapts to. So I always, my confidence level grows when I see a horse that has proven himself over the track. And Golden Ticket's race November 11th of last year, it is a, you know, it's a solid race. He ran second to Ever So Lucky, you know, who was a very promising horse. And I believe that McPeak's horses will be ready at Churchill. You've got Leperu from Cruz, which I would say is a slight upgrade. In the 5, you know, I'm going to get a lot of value there. The horse will be a short price, but I think you can have a fairly high degree of confidence in the 5 running his race. The other horse I would be interested in would be the 7. You know, it was speed favoring on Louisiana Derby Day. Most of the horses that closed seemed to do it toward the rail. This horse was hung wide, was off the pace. Just don't think he got to run his race that day. I think he'll give a much better account of himself tomorrow. And his previous race in the Risen Star is, you know, is a very nice race. So I think the 5 and 7 fit very well into tomorrow's third race.
You know, I came up, Mike, with the same two horses, and for different reasons. I'm looking at I have a trainer pattern model that I play, and it has to do with McPeak's horses. And at Churchill, over the last calendar year, I've got him winning at just over 20%, and you would generate a flat bet profit, 15% profit, if you just put $2 to win on every horse that he had at Churchill over the last year. I realize that's just a, you know, an angle, and it might not be a strong angle for some people, but when you combine that with the numbers that this horse has run, to me, the 5 does look like it could be a playable horse. And I end up on the 7 horse simply because of the numbers. And I saw the trip in a similar way that you saw it last time. I watched that race, and I have a trip note that he was hung wide. And I don't think that's what he wants. When I look at, say, his race on the 21st of January, he rallied, but he was inside on the turns. And I think that's where you wanted to be. So I concur with you.
I like the 10 a little bit in that race as well. That's the Todd Pletcher horse that ran in the Louisiana Derby. He's a presser, certainly the only thing I don't like is he has not had recent activity, and that certainly is a negative. But he certainly could get a part of the try as well.
Yeah, guys, I can't add anything. I have no real opinion to this race. The only thing I would say was that the 5 didn't even have a clean trip last time. But the only concern I have with the 5 is coming back really, I think, pretty quick. And so that'd be my only concern with that. But other than that, I really don't have a strong opinion. I'm going to pass this race.
Okay, let's jump to the next one.
Well, somebody else is going to have to pick up
the phone
here.
I'll kick it off. I don't really have a strong opinion, but I kind of like the 5 a little bit. And Mike, you probably watched this race here, Keeneland guy. I thought this horse finished up pretty good in the in his Keeneland race on the 14th. He's come back. He's worked well since. And I just think that, I just think when I look at the kind of the late fractions, that's where I kind of concentrate on turf racing, you know, how the horse is finishing up. I think this horse finished up real strong. And I think he might want more distance than, a mile and a 16th. I'm a little concerned about that. But if you go back to some of his European races, I know they're a long, long time ago. They're quite strong. Again, he might want more distance, but I just kind of like the finish. I like the price. I like to look at some of these, 2 over 180, the trainer is, pretty good. And in terms of the percentage, it looks like it's 27%. And I just think there's a horse that 8-1 that I'll be using heavily in my pick 4. So that's kind of really my opinion on race 4.
That's the horse. This is Bob. That's the horse that I actually triggered on as well. He closed like a freight train in his last race, and I feel like that he's going to do nothing but improve off that race.
I didn't come up with the 5 as a – I didn't come up with the race itself as a playable race, but when I look at the power ratings that I have, the 5 does have the top for the race. So, putting together what you guys said with the numbers that I have for that one North American race, especially the late pace number, I can I can land on that very easily. All right, let's jump to the next race. We are in race 5, and we're looking at 7 furlongs. Now it's optional claiming.
Go, Bob.
Well, this one I didn't look at as close as I should have. I actually, I'll do 5 and 6 because I did look at 6 pretty closely. You got a 6-to-1 in there that is number 6, Thermal Cat, that looks to me to be the speed of the race, and by a nice margin. Now there is a favorite in there that has some early speed as well, which is the 3. But he's going to be probably shorter odds than I personally would play. But I do like the 6 because of his speed ratings, his pace ratings. This is his second coming back from his second basically. I think if I go to my program here, we're on race. Hold on 1 second. Yes, this is his second start. Joel Rosario aboard really ran a heck of a maiden special, had a heck of a maiden special win. The pace today is going to be faster, but I do feel like that this is a horse that could command a price and could show very well and make it 2 in a row.
My opinion is that they got to bet that horse. I mean, I think he's going to be bet, especially that it's Catalano. And, you know, he could go win. There's no doubt about it. I don't follow, you know, Hawthorne. I don't know how good or bad those horses coming out of those races are. I don't have a strong opinion on the race. But I do think there's a long shot that's viable. And I think that's before his tee time. It's 20-1 in the morning line. And, you know, I don't think this horse wants 2 turns, and they kind of turned him back, but they ran him in a stakes race. And that race was really fast, you know, I think, especially for Turfway. It's kind of fast early, and he just kind of got cooked. I think maybe they take this horse back, run like he did in his debut. I mean, I think he's worth it, you know, including in, you know, some of these odds. I definitely think he could hit the board, and, you know, I think he could hit all slots, so. I like the 4 at his tee time. And Robbie Alvarado is going to be off, obviously, because he got arrested today. So I'm assuming, you know, it'd be interesting who they put on. So look for who they put on. If it's a top rider, then this horse would be a go. The only other thing I want to point out, and I don't know if everyone uses this, I found like an old guy at my track. He's an old-time trainer. And I know it seems simple, it seems like it's there, but I use it and I like it. He goes to the scratches from the day before or whatever and tells you why the horse was scratched before, if there's any horses that were scratched previous races. And the 5 with Velasquez Pletcher horse was scratched on April 21st. And any time I see a vet scratch, I just view that as a negative. Not saying that I make a complete decision on it, but Big Blue Nation number 5 was a vet scratch on the 21st. And you notice he made a really good workout on the 14th, and then he was scratched, and then his workout coming back didn't look as fast. I don't know if that means anything, but I just put it out there for players as something that you might want to kind of incorporate, because I find it very useful for me.
Do you find that when they are vet scratched that you can I've played with that over the years, and I've had trouble making sense of it because you never know the real reason. And I've even gone to some of the trainers and, you know, some of the trainers that I know when one of their horses gets vet scratched and I'll ask. And I most of the time I feel like I might not be getting a straight answer from them.
I think there's a difference. You know, there's Stewart scratches, you know, maybe more technical and stuff. But a vet scratch, I mean, there's something obviously – something didn't look right in a horse from somebody.
Right.
And Jeff, what I try to do is, like in this case, I try to incorporate it into, you know, what I'm thinking here. So the horse had a bullet workout, and then he gets scratched. okay, so what happened? Did the bull work out, whatever? What was the effect of that? And then you see the horse has three layoff lines already. He's only run four races lifetime. To me, that's a negative. I mean, you know, especially with Fletcher and Velasquez, the horse is going to take money. So, you know, maybe let this type of horse beat me. You know, but if he's 20-1, you know, there might be some inclusion. So, you know, it all depends, I guess.
I had a little opinion in here also. I think, obviously, the 3 Mile High Magic and the 6 Thermal Cat are the number horses, the horses that look like they've shown the most ability. You know, Thermal Cat's interesting. I think that was a better-than-average maiden race at Hawthorne last time. You know, he could be any kind of horse. He's in good hands. Catalano's horses are running well at this meet. But I thought if anyone was sleeping, if anyone ran in at a price in that race, it might possibly be the 10, Macho Macho. I think it's an interesting trainer change. Neil Howard, very capable trainer, but kind of a hay, oats, and water type of guy in my mind. And the horse being transferred into Asmussen Barn could be some more aggressive veterinary work, if you will. That would wake this horse up and possibly improve it. And the horse has shown ability in its races previously, so, and has a nice figure pattern on top of that, look where it could possibly be ready to move forward. So, and certainly looks like it should handle the extra eighth of a mile that it's going to get tomorrow. So the 10 Macho Macho would be a horse that I'll be including in my exotic bet.
Yeah, he's solid, Mike. I agree with that assessment. He's also one I'll be using. I think this could be a spicy pick 4, the 4 through the 7. That's my play. You know, I know Mike's a super guy. Bob, I'm not sure, but I'm a horizontal guy, and I think this pick 4 has a lot of potential because even though I'll include horses like the 3 and the 6, I'll be kind of playing against them. With big fields, you can expect big prices in these types of big races.
All right, moving on to race 6, 5 furlongs on the turf. We're looking at a stakes race this time.
I'll take this. My pick is the 10. I'm sorry, not the 10. It's the 2. Especially if it turns up wet. And they come off. Great Attack ran in the Breeders' Cup turf. Has not been successful. He won a race back in Tampa. He won a small stakes race back in Tampa. But my main interest in him is if they have to come off the turf. I think that Wesley Ward, Joel Rosario. He's certainly got the pedigree for it. He's not a big winner. You know, he's won 5 out of 16 lifetime. I think that he has a real good opportunity at a price.
Bob, I agree. He's got a big shot. In fact, I think he's kind of repeating, coming back to a pattern that he had last year where he came off a layoff. If you look back at his past performance, October the 18th, at Keeneland, ran a soft race, and then came back to Churchill, ran a pretty good race in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, kind of doing the same pattern. And so I like him. I think Bridgetown is the numbers horse, Fletcher, so you got to kind of, even though he's a favorite, you know, you have to use him if you're going to kind of play multi-race. And then the horse I kind of really like, unless he regresses, was the 10, because Great Mills ran a great race. And he's kind of a 4-year-old, so I think he's improving. The only concern is that big effort last time because I thought he ran huge. I think LeBrew made a mistake there. He never saw that horse coming up on the side of him. I think he has a big shot if he's able to run back. 2 bombers I'll give you, the 3 and the 12. And I'm kind of against Chamberlain Bridge, even though he's a great horse, class horse. I think he's seen his better days, and he's kind of over the top, so I'm going to kind of play against him. So 2, 4, 10, I think, are my keys, and 3 and 12 are potential bombers, and Logan, I'm going to try to beat.
All right. Thanks, John. I just had one comment. This is Jeff. I have one comment about this race. I'm looking at a number of need the lead or want the lead horses in here, and I see a lot of them. And so then I look at the averages of all their early pace figs, and it's on the high side. This is what I would call a fast-paced race. And this is the type of race where you could easily get a meltdown. So with that in mind, I start to look at it, and I start to ask myself, well, who is going to be close enough when the meltdown occurs and have enough late to pick up the pieces? And I end up on the 3, Cactus Sun. And then I look and I see, well, Robbie Alvarado is the assigned rider. Who are they going to have on him? Who are they going to have on this horse? I'm really interested to see what the rider change is tomorrow. Because the Cactus Sun, you know, you're 15-1 in the morning line. I see a little bit of opportunity here.
You know, can I just comment on the meltdown? I think you got to be careful in these sprint races, these turf sprints. One thing I do that's real helpful, I don't know how many of our listeners use Formulator, but go into Formulator and just do a filter on 5-furlong turf races on these types of races, and just look at the horses with the highest speed figures. They usually win because it's such a specialist thing. So you may see horses with good speed figures and all the rest, but they're not doing, they may even be doing 5.5 furlongs or whatever. Look at 5-furlong races. You want to look at the speed figure and also the class of the race. I tell you, so many times, and with these turf sprints, I pick some big horses just doing that. Don't try to even over-handicap it because it's such a specialist distance. Horses that run this distance do the best. That's a general way of handicapping these for folks that do that, because I think sometimes you can get bogged down in lots of stuff, and you just it's not kind of like a traditional race. It's such a unique distance and unique kind of horse that does well at this distance.
But I agree with you, John. It's just not long enough for some of the horses to really get unwound. The pace is already too far in front of them.
Mike, any thoughts there?
You know, not a lot, Jeff. I don't think I'll be making any aggressive bets in here. I do agree with the very hot pace scenario, and Bob's ideas on the 2 were, you know, make perfect sense to me. So I don't have a lot of strong opinion there, but I do think you're going to have a hot pace.
All right. Moving on to Churchill, race 7, 7 furlongs, another stakes race.
This is Bob. We had already talked prior a little bit about this race, and once again, this is factoring the slop factor, I guess you'd call it, but number 8, Will's Wildcat, could be a monster on the slop at a price. And he definitely has shown a propensity for cranking it on wet conditions, and that definitely is going to be my play if it comes up wet. And he's not a bad horse if it doesn't, but there's a lot of other ones in the race that are going to overshadow him. We got Shackleford in here, and we got Amazombie, and we have Smiling Tiger, so it's certainly a very nice race. But I'd love to catch him at 10-1 on the slot. Number 8.
This is a very tough race for me. Some races just I can't get comfortable in, and this is one of those. Shackleford is obviously, you know, to me, he's the most solid horse in the race. I have the most confidence in him running his race, but at 2-1, I don't see the value. So this is a race I'll probably pass.
Well, you know, I'm playing a pick 4, so I kind of love this race because I think this race is just destined to have a big price. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think it's – I just think he could. I look at profiles of the tracks and, I do my own profile, like how favorites do and so forth. Brist does this, too, in their past performances. And, basically what they're saying here is that, favorites don't win this race. They're normal 33%, only 24%. And pressures drawn outside are best for this race. The way I look at this race, Smiling Tiger is the best horse. I mean, fast. He's the fastest horse in the race. And if he ever could come back and run his race, that'd be great. He runs well off layoff, so layoffs don't bother me. But he's drawn inside, and 251 days is a long time in between layoffs. But I think if you're going to play this race in multiples, in pick fours, you have to include him. Amazombie is the sprint champion. He's the best sprinter in the country, and he's won over the track. I just don't know if 7 furlongs is his distance. There's a horse here that's 20-1. I think he's got some value, and that's Gentry. I mean, I, when you look at this race, it's not much speed in this race. I mean, Shackelford, he walked out on the lead there in New York, and every time he runs a triple-digit buyer, he regresses. So, I think Gentry breaks out of the gate. If he breaks on the lead, he could wire this field. And if not, maybe he can stalk, Smiling Tiger's push and Shackelford's push. He can stalk them and maybe, win this thing. I just think he's a price and worth inclusion. I'm going to use Smiling Tiger, Amazombie, Gentry, Shackelford, and if the track comes up wet, I wholeheartedly agree with Bob. Will's Wildcat becomes a huge bet. I mean, it becomes an automatic bet for me.
All right, going over to Churchill Race 8. We're on the turf, hopefully, going a mile, and we're looking at a stakes race for fillies and mares 4 years old and up.
Hey, Jeff, I've got an opinion about this race, so I'll start. I just think that this is a great race, another great race, all good races. And you look at the three, marketing mix, Daisy Divine, and out on the outside, the number 9, Lorraine Leon. I think they all have a similar style. They all want to be close up and then just kick. And so what I think what's going to happen with the field, they're going to kind of get bunched up. And, maybe the 6 goes out to the lead, but he's a non-factor. And they're going to bunch up behind him. And I'm just thinking that, I think what's going to happen is the 10, who I think is a hell of a horse, is going to take back, especially if this turf course has got a little give in it. I love this 10, Hungry Island. I think this horse, Blasco, is going to take him back and make one run. And if it's got a little give to it, this horse ran a race at Saratoga last year, went by Winter Memories, and the rest of the field, like they were like nailed to the fence. And her race last time at Keeneland, Mike, I don't know if you had the same trip on her, but she was 5 wide. She was 2-3 wide the first turn, and then 5 wide the entire turn, not just into the stretch. And she still stayed on nicely, and it was the first race off a layoff. Gets Velasquez back for Shug. I think she has the best late kick, makes one run, and just kind of goes by them late. The only other thing here I would say is Daisy Divine. I had her last time, and I think she got kind of loose on the lead. But I don't think she was actually – I think she may have even a better race in her. So, I'll kind of use her a little bit as far as those pressers and early pace types. But I think Hungry Island may have one run that kind of gets by them all.
I would tend to agree, John. The Hungry Island, I thought she ran an exceptionally good race, as good as you can run and run third beating the length. There was no pace in that race. The pace was very slow, and she was disadvantaged by that. She came home very well, and, just the circumstances of the race were working against her that day. And I've noticed this spring that Shug's horses, McGahee, the trainer of the 10, his horses are tending to do better after they've had the one race out this year. They're running their, much better after they've had the initial race off the winter break. So, if she moves forward off of that race, she's going to be very, very tough. at a square price.
Hey, Mike, I have a question for you because, you know, we talked about the Daisy Devine race last time. And,
right.
You know, I know you have some connections with her connections. And they weren't even like saying, hey, she's going to win this day. And I thought maybe they were maybe pointing to this race. Any indication that was the case,
I don't think that Andrew McKeever was totally confident in her in that race. You know, I think he wondered, you know, how she fit in with those horses. And I think, you know, I don't think that she's maybe ever dominate a grade one field like that again. I think she got it the ultimate pace scenario there. I make my own pace figures for Keeneland and Churchill, and you normally get a roughly an even pace. In other words, the quarter and the half time should be similar to the final time. Her finishing time in my figures was a 94, which is equivalent to a 94 buyer. Her quarter mile was a 48, and her half mile was a 44. So that's how incredibly slow the pace was in that race, and yet she was left alone in that slow of a pace. So she got she should have run a great race that day. She got, you know, an optimum setup, and, you know, horses Andy Serling would say she's all dressed up, and she is all dressed up. So I have a hard time playing those type of horses, even though I know what you're saying, John, in that she was progressing nicely leading into that race, so I'm not going to completely eliminate her, but I'll only be using her defensively.
All right. This is Jeff. Guys, one thing that our tech guys are telling us is that they're asking us to introduce ourselves when we start to speak. So with that said, this is Jeff, and moving on to Churchill Race 9. We have a grade 1 at 7 furlongs for fillies and mares 4 years old and up.
Well, you know, I'll start because one thing that's always interesting to me is, you know, you got to beat the favorites in to make money. And the favorite is really vulnerable in these types of races. You know, this is just a general statement, then we can get into the race, but they only win one of the last three races of this type. You know, again, I base this on some of the information on Brisk. I don't do Churchill, so I don't have my own profile on the races. But they only win one of 20 races of this type of stake race, this type of distance. And I just think that that's the case here because, I mean, look at some of the favorites, the three, Sassy Image got a perfect setup coming off a 250-day layoff. I don't particularly fond of that. Groupie Doll is okay. Put the blinkers on and improved, you know, and ran a good figure. I'll be using her, but I'm just not excited about her. And when I look at this race, it has no pace, has absolutely no pace. And the only horse I see that actually has the best this early pace is the 5. Now the only concern And the only concern I have with the 5 is that, you know, Bayerano gets off, but Rosario gets on, so that kind of, you know, helps me a little bit. In fact, that Rosario gets on the 9 is the other horse I like because, you know, Fox is one of the best sprint trainers. You know, I spent some time in Florida, and Fox is one of the best sprint trainers in the country. Everyone remembers Big Drama. This is John, by the way. And, you know, when I look at that, I just hated Musical Romance's race last time. Switch is not the same horse. You always got to include Liparul a little bit, but I'm using a lot of the 5 and 9 and backing up with the 4 and the 6 in this race. So, that's my plan, hoping to really bomb it out because I think if I can bomb this out, then the pick 4 and the pick 5 are going to pay monster. And so that's my strategy. I'm willing to kind of give up on some of, include less of these cheaper horses, you know, those lower price horses to get a big score. It's kind of the way I play. Because, you know what, grinding is okay. You know, I grind a little bit more with win bets versus trying to grind with pick 4s and pick 5s. I try to make the scores in the pick 4s and pick 5s, pick 6s, and grind a little bit more with win bets. That's my style.
John, this is Bob, and I have the five, especially, once again, if it comes up wet.
Yeah, I mean, the horse is going to be, I mean, I think the horse could fall out of the gate and be on the lead.
That's what I thought. This is Jeff. I have just an early speed-based profile, and the five, you know, obviously this horse is the only speed in the race. But there's a lot of other things that the five has going for it that tie up here. And I'm looking at the morning line, and I'm just scratching my head. How can this horse be 20-1 in the morning line? Realistically, to me, this horse should be at most 5 or 6-1. So I'm thinking even if the horse goes out there and starts to shorten up in the stretch, this horse is still going to be in the superfecta.
This is actually my type A or type 1 bet that I, when I go to tournaments and play in tournaments, this is the horse I'm looking for. A horse that has a chance to actually set the pace and control the pace within itself. And this is my type 1 play. So I love to see this type come up on the cards. They don't win every time, but if they have an opportunity to set the pace within their boundaries, then they certainly have a great opportunity.
Yeah, I mean the other thing is just for, you know, in the slot, to Bob's point, her second race out was a stakes race. And she went wire to wire and ran a 98. She ran a 98. I mean, if you do normal projection on that, I know she's obviously had some problems. She's, you know, she wasn't the same horse. But, I mean, you just see the potentials there with this horse. Carla Gaines is just an excellent horsewoman. And, you know, I follow California. She's top-notch. She uses both Rosario and Bejarano. You know, I don't know why Bejarano kind of switched there. You know, he rode the horse last time, but, you know, you're not losing anything with Joel. And I just echo the things the other guys are saying.
This is Mike, and I totally agree with what the fellows are saying about the five. It'll be amazing if that horse goes off at that price of 20-1 on the morning line. But The two observations that I'll make in the race is, like John said earlier, I play all the wagers, but my main focus is on trifectas and superfectas. I'm always looking for a consistent key horse that I can say, I believe this horse is going to be first or second, or first, second, and third, so I can center my bets around that. And that horse for me in this race is Groupie Doll. I think the blinkers really helped her last time. I'm not interested in betting her to win at 5-2. I realize that the race is too wide open for that, but I believe she's going to run a good race tomorrow. I believe she's going to get in the trifecta, probably in the exacta, and so she'll be my key horse. The other observation that I want to make is that the 8 Musical Romance is a play against for me here. I follow Keenum very closely. I could find no excuse for her poor performance in her last race. So it tells me she, you know, I'm going to guess that she's a horse that's going off form. And at a 4-1 morning line, I will exclude her from all wagers and feel like I'm eliminating the takeout by leaving the 8 out of the equation. So I won't be used to her in any of my bets, and just hoping that I'm correct about her being on the downside of her form cycle.
Mike, this is John. I couldn't agree with you more. The Musical Romance, that race is terrible. And I think she wins when she gets the perfect trip, when she sits inside horses and can come out and make a run. And I think, you know, I'm really against her, too, I'll be honest. And I'm against Switch, too. I just don't see it. And Groupie Doll, you're dead on. I mean, if you had to play a horse that has to hit the board, Groupie Doll is definitely a horse. Has not run a bad race, this horse. Never.
Yeah. The Madison and Keeneland was a monster race. Really was.
Just a quick email question. The two morning line chalk, Switch and Sassy's Image, layoffs, any opinions on those two?
I think I mentioned Sassy's Image. Looks like she's working out great. I just don't like the way she kind of left. You know, it's been 252 days. Dale Rowans is a hell of a horse, guys. So, but the only thing is, when she ran her big race, she won this race last year, I believe, right? And I watched that race, and she just got the perfect setup. I mean, just the perfect setup. I just don't see the same thing because there's not that much pace in the race. So I'm kind of betting against her. Just based on that. And then on Switch, this horse used to be a monster. I mean, this horse would destroy, you normally destroy a field like this. But the fact that neither Bayerano or Rosario on this horse is a big negative with Sadler, in my opinion. When Sadler ships to Churchill, he's had limited success. So I'm against those two.
This is Mike. I'm going to defer to John on the Sadler call. He knows more about the intricacies of Sadler horses than I do. The Romans horse, I agree wholeheartedly that the race last year at Churchill wasn't as good as it looks on paper. But Romans is extremely dangerous on these kind of days with these kind of horses. So not a horse I'm interested in betting to win at 5-2, and not a horse I'm going to key by any means, but that horse does, I wouldn't want anyone to get beat out of a big pick by Sassy Image, because Romans, I've seen him do that before. He can take a horse like this and have it totally ready and get the money.
Hey, Mike, John, this is John again. I think that's a good point. You know, sometimes I say, you know, I don't like these horses. But what I'm basically saying, which is a little bit different, and I agree with Mike's point here. When I say I don't like this horse, I don't like this horse at 5-2, Sassy's Image. I don't like Switching 2-1. I just think you could do a lot better. I'm talking more from a win side. Mike is talking more kind of inclusions and, you know, different types of bets. And it's not to say I wouldn't use a Sassy's Image or a Switch, you know, in an extreme backup ticket. But what I'm trying to do is I look at value. I'm a value player, especially on the win end. And, you know, there's just so much more value in this race. And, again, the early point about only 1 in 20 favorites have won this race, I think speaks a lot. And I think Musical Romance will take a lot of money to probably be closer to the favorite than any of them. And like Mike said, that's a play against.
All right, this is Jeff. Moving on to the 10th, we have 9 furlongs on the turf, grade 1, the Woodford Reserve. I'll go first. I actually have a play in here. I looked at the pace scenario, and this to me is a fast-paced race. Independent of that, I have a spot play that landed on the 9 horse because of that horse's late pace ability. I don't see any other horses that have the ability to run with this horse late. If the pace falls apart at all, I feel that this horse can actually win this race. And looking at the morning line at 15-1, I'd be shocked. I mean, I'd really be shocked if the horse actually went off at, say, less than 6 or 7-1. I feel like there is potential for some really good value in this race with this horse, the 9 horse.
Jeff, this is John. I agree with you. It's going to be a hot pace race. I mean, Little Mike, Get Stormy, and Turbo Compressor all want the lead, and they're all really good. But and it may fall apart. I don't know. But, you know, I just in general, when races of classy, when classy horses run, races don't really fall apart. It's not like it's, you know, a low-level claimer. And El Collar, you know, your 9 horse, I think he runs okay, but I don't think he wants the 1.8, and I don't think he likes Churchill. So I don't think the race kind of sets up for him to that. And I don't think he's the best closer, you know, particularly in this race. Okay, I think the 2 is a better closer. And Data Links may be a better closer. Doubles Partner is a better closer. I landed on Brilliant Speed because, I mean, I think this horse has got a ton of talent. And getting 10-1 with Johnny Velasquez is going to be pretty good. I didn't think he had the kick in the last race, but that was because he ran a middle fraction of 44-3. I mean, that's hot. And so it was his first off the layoff. I think this horse has got a ton of talent. I think he can run on grass or synthetics. If you look at it, he won the Bluegrass last year. He ran well in the Kentucky Derby. He did pretty well. I just think that this race, with a lot of the speed, he may sit like right behind the speed and get first run on the deep closers. And I like him, and I like Doubles Partner in this race. And that's the way I see this race. The only thing about Turbo Compressor, maybe he sits off the real speed, but he ran a freakish race on March 18th. I don't like that Castellano gets off of him, and he may not be a mile and eighth horse, but that was a freak race, freakish.
Well, I don't have anything to add because I've already got Brilliant Speed on my list for the same reasons, John. I feel like he's not a real win type horse, but he's an honest horse, and I think that he's got a good one coming up in him. I think that he's ready to fire is what I'm trying to say, but I want a price on him.
Yeah, and he's never finished. He finished off the board once in turf races, so he's a really good, consistent horse, especially on the turf. In the synthetics, you've got to throw his dirt races out. He's never finished in the money on dirt. He's not a dirt horse. So,
right.
Once you do that, he becomes a very consistent horse at a big price.
I agree.
This is Mike. I don't have a strong opinion in here, but the two horses that I'm interested in both come out of the Makers Mile, which April 13th at Keeneland. I'm interested in the 2 and the 6. I think that was a strong race, the Makers Mile. Tour Allure was 3-4 wide in that race. I thought he ran a great race off a layoff. Lopresti, his trainer, has brought his three stars out off of similar layoffs this year. Well, a couple of them a lot longer layoffs than this, but he's brought his three stars out off of layoffs. They've all run well, and they've all come back the second time to run well. So I believe that Tour Allure, you can count on getting a representative performance from him. The other horse I'd be interested in is Doubles Partner, who took a sneaky bad trip last time. He had nowhere to go when he really needed to run in the race. And now it's third off the layoff. I think the last race did him a lot of good, but he really wasn't able to perform as well as he could have. I think he'll set a nice trip in here behind the pace. And I think the 2 and the 6 both run big races.
Yeah, I think mile 8 is perfect for the 6. That's a perfect distance. It's just kind of his run style. So I think it suits him the best.
This is Jeff. There's no getting around it. Guys, I live right down the street from a fire station. You might hear a siren in the background every time there's a wreck. This time of day, the fire trucks pull out. So if you heard that on my phone, I apologize.
Jeff, just so on your 9, just go back to May 7th. They ran a similar, they ran kind of the same fuel, ran the same race, basically. And if you see kind of the way the 9 ran that day, I think you're going to see something similar on tomorrow's card. He kind of stayed back, and he couldn't keep up with the pace. He didn't even keep up with the pace. I sometimes think some of these things with some of these closers, people think that the faster the pace is going to be better. And that's not necessarily true. It kind of takes their kick out. And I think that's why with Al-Khali, I think he wants, his best kick is, when he's grinding, he's like he's like 12 furlong type of horse, not a 9 furlong. I think he's not as explosive. He's more of a, long strider, and he's kind of a grinder.
That said, I would agree with your assessment of the horse, but if I get 12 to 1, 15 to 1, something like that, I'm still going to bet him.
Can't argue.
All right.
You throw in the possibility that the turf might have a lot of, have some moisture in it, even if it's not off the turf, too. So that throws another.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mike, let me ask you, your opinion when the Churchill turf course is wet, does that, in your opinion, affect the ability of closers to get there? Or
I think so, Jeff. You know, it's not hard and fast rule. But I know of you know, many big days at Churchill where we got a significant amount of rain, and the turf course, you know, was speed favoring to some degree. So that's the bias. You know, every track kind of has its tendencies, and everyone that's listening to this call knows their home track or the track they concentrate on. They know when it gets wet what it tends to do, and doesn't mean it'll do that every time. But my experience has been when the turf course gets wet at Churchill, it tends to favor speed or at least positional speed.
You know, the other thing I think you got to do is look at the horse itself. I mean, because I think sometimes other horses aren't just handling it, so I think you get a maybe get a misread on what the track is really doing because this certain horse is just not running their races. So you'll see slower fractions and horses that you know generally are way back or up front. So I think it, you know, I think you got to look at the horse's past performances, do a filter on them on off tracks, and see how well or how not well they've run on the off going.
All right. Anything else, guys? All right. This is Jeff. Moving to the next race, turning the page, and it's time to talk about the Kentucky Derby. We actually have a couple of questions about the Derby that were emailed in or have been emailed to me from our tech guys. First question would be Derby question about Creative Causes Health. Does anybody have any info or have you heard anything or do you have an opinion?
You know, it's just an opinion. I have a friend this is John. I have a friend that's a clocker, and he was in Kentucky, you know, this week, and he follows Creative Cause because he's based in Southern California also, and the horse is based there. And he really hasn't seen a change in the horse. I guess the horse had some issue with losing a shoe, and I guess it ripped his foot. I don't know all the details. I heard the same things, but based on his view of the horse, he says the horse is doing well, and he doesn't have a whole lot of concerns. He thinks the horse is going to run his race, and I think at 13-1, he's got a lot of value. So I wouldn't let that take you off a Creative Cause. I mean, the one thing I would say about Derby in general, right? We get overload on information, and I know you want to try to process every piece of information, but at the end of the day, I would stick to your traditional things. It's just as good as anything for handicapping the races. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is noise. And unless you trust the information where it's coming from, ignore it.
That's a really good point. Thank you for making that point. Same question, different horse, Hansen. He was reported as being ranked in a workout. Any different thoughts or with the same thought process as Mike?
Mike Welsh had on the Daily Racing Forum this morning that he acted up on the track and was not very happy and took an outrider to assistance to handle him. But who knows, you know? I mean, there's so much going on there. There's probably thousands of people a few people at the workouts. You know, he may have saw something he didn't like. It's hard to say. I agree with John. There's going to be news come out, and this is just part of the Derby. It's part of the Derby scene. You know.
All right. Next question that comes from from the audience, and that is, would you guys discuss the pace scenario for the Derby?
Well, this is Mike. That's a layup, so let me take that. The pace scenario, in my opinion, is going to be extremely fast. I don't see how it cannot be. Trenenberg has no business being in the Derby, in my opinion. He's a one-dimensional sprinter. He's going to the front. He's going to go very fast early. He's going to compromise, someone. The other speed horses, someone will probably get work their way into a nice first over trip outside where they'll get a look at running by him and being in the clear where they're not catching a lot of kickback and maybe getting to run their race. But there will also be some speed horses that get shuffled in the mix behind Trenenberg when he starts to tire, and then they'll be compromised. So, for my 2 cents worth, I guess it's okay if I go ahead and give my opinion of the race while I'm on a roll here. I think Bodemeister is the fastest horse in the race, and that's not splitting any atoms. I think a lot of people probably have that same opinion. And he is, even though Mike Smith, I think, will try to get him, he'll use all his, many skills to try to get him to relax early. I just don't think you're going to be able to strangle him, for very long. He's a free running horse, and he's going to want to take over the race at some point. And I think probably down the backside or early in the turn. And when he does, if I'm right about Bodemeister, when he does, you try to move to the front, make his move, he's going to compromise the other front runners in the race because they're going to be in an unfamiliar position, and they're going to be chasing a very, very talented horse at that point. So, I'm going to approach my betting ideas for the race are going to be twofold. One is that I'm going to try to play the race where Bodemeister is a freak, and he just, dominates the field and wins the race. The other scenario I'm going to play is where the pace just gets so insane that all the front runners are compromised, they fall apart, and horses that are not nearly so talented end up in the mix at the end of the race just because of the pace scenario, a la Giacomo. So, when I look at that scenario, you're looking at horses that are short prices, some of them that are not big enough prices for me to accept, what I have to accept there, like Dullahan. That's a horse that, he has the perfect style. He's trained by Romans, who knows every inch of the Churchill track and knows how to train a horse up to a big race at Churchill. He's probably going to get a cut of something, but at the price he's going to be, it's hard for me to get excited about him. Union Rags is going to get a good look. Leperu is the perfect rider for a meltdown pace scenario like this. But there again, you're taking a short price on a horse that there's things I don't like about him. So the horse that I'm kind of coming to, and the way I'm coming to him, it's Daddy Knows Best, the 10 horse. I'm saying he's not nearly the most talented horse in the race, and Leperu leaves him for Union Rags. But he is a horse that's going to be a price, and he's trained by a good man, Steve Aspison, whose horses consistently run well at Churchill. He has the right style. He can deep close when he needs to. And, I'm not going to be making a huge win bet on him or singling him in the picks. What I'm going to be doing is saying, here's a horse that, given what I see as the pace scenario of the Derby, very fast, here's a horse that's going to be finishing, that has enough ability to get in the tri or to get in the superfecta. And in a 20-horse field like this with a dollar super minimum, even for somebody like me, this is a very expensive proposition to try to narrow this thing down and to take a legitimate shot at the Super and to take a legitimate shot at the Tri. So what I'll be doing is trying to get Daddy's Knows Best on the board and hoping that I can narrow the rest of the madness down to where I have a chance to hit that, you know, one-in-a-lifetime type trifecta or superfecta payoff, while at the same time hedging myself in case Bodemeister is the freak that he very well could be. You know, I also have my backup tickets where I'm playing him on top of a bunch of horses that have finished. So I'll take a twofold approach.
This is Bob. I too like the 10. And the reason also is I like horses that come to Churchill and go about their business in a business-like way. And he has been basically the star of Churchill as far as how he has handled the track, how he has handled his going about his business, and it looks like a million-dollar bill. And there's another horse along the same lines that I'm going to play with him, and that's Union Rags. The only thing that I question about Union Rags is Dixie Union. The distance has been a problem for his lineage, his pedigree. But I think that the reports from Churchill are that Union Rags looks like $1 million and is training well, and I'm going to play those in a nice size exacta. And the last horse, the third horse that I'm going to put in the mix is Take Charge Indy, The horse is also along the same lines, training very well at Churchill since his Florida Derby win, much better than prior to the Derby, the Florida Derby. And I just can't get past the Calvin magic at Churchill. This is a good horse. There's no doubt about it. This is a really good horse. I don't know about the post position. It really depends on the track, how it comes up and how much moisture is in it. And my upset horse, which will be on some of my tickets, is Went the Day Well. I feel that this is a horse that, a lot of these, we have no idea how good they are. They're three-year-old colts. But this horse is making tremendous progress up the skill ladder, and I feel like that he's got a very good shot at upsetting the apple cart. But my number one play, which will be in all of my exotics, is Daddy Knows Best, the number 10.
All right, another question emailed in from the audience is, any thoughts on El Padrino?
This is John. I the only thing is I heard from my guy who was on site there that he just looked terrible when he got off the van. He was all washed out for a couple of days. His numbers are kind of going the wrong way. I kind of liked him, though, because I thought, just like Union Rags, he got terrible setups. And even the race that he won in Louisiana, it was a slow pace, and he grinded to a win. And I think he's a better horse. I don't know if we're going to see a Derby day, but down the road, I think, you know, he'll win his share of races. I just would use him sparingly underneath if you're playing those exotics and stuff. I'm going to be playing, you know, the pick fours and pick fives, and I'm going to have to spread here. But the only opinion I had, and I kind of wrote about this a little bit on Horse Racing Nation, was that, you know, last year, I thought the Breeders' Cup Juvenile was the key race. And, you know, when you looked at it, most of these horses ran in that race, and the three that kind of dominated the race, I know it's another year, it's a mile and a 16th, but it was on this track. And Creative Cause, Hanson, and Union Rags really dominated that race. And, you know, Dale Romans keeps pointing out, Dullahan, that, you know, look at his race, you know, he had problems in the gate and he closed. I didn't like the way he was closing. I don't think he likes dirt. He seemed to be leaning on his left lead. And if he has trouble in the gate, which he normally does in a 20-horse deal like this, I think he's going to have to overcome a lot to win this. You know, the thing is, you know, everyone wants to go with the deep closer, but you need to be in position to win this race at the top of the stretch. I think the last 15 derbies, only three horses will overcome that. And I agree with Mike, if you get a pace scenario that's crazy, you know, that could happen, like the Giacomo and so forth. But I don't even think Trinidad is even that fast. I really don't even think he's that fast of a horse. And I personally think Hanson's the fastest horse. And I still think they'll compromise themselves. But if it's a wet track and speed's carrying a little bit better, you know, look for some of those scenarios where you see Hanson and Bodie Meister hanging around. The only thing with Bodie Meister, I watched that race, the San Felipe, and he was still developing. But Creative Cause ran by him and galloped out seven lengths, you know, beyond him after that. And I think the only thing the thing I like about Creative Cause is, you know, the blink is off. He's been a little bit more relaxed. He's keeping a straighter line. And I'm just hoping that Joel Rosario gets a good position and kind of holds and then makes one run. You know, I'm kind of with Bob on Union Reg and Mike, and with Daddy Knows Best. But pure value for me, I think, is Creative Cause.
All right, we have another question, and it goes back to Bodie Meister. And it is, tell us a good reason for not tossing Bodie Meister. And I think Mike's point about the very real possibility that Bodie Meister could just simply be a freak might be a very valid answer. Any other thoughts out there?
Well, this is Mike, and a couple other things would be, you know, that he's by Empire Maker. He might relish, you know, the mile and a quarter more than some of the other horses. And another point would be that he's trained by Bob Baffert. And, you know, sometimes you guys like me get so engrossed in all the minutiae of the handicapping of Derby that you forget, you know, who's the white-haired guy that wins a lot of them, you know. You want to give him a little extra credit. So those would be two points that I would make in his favor.
But I agree.
The fastest horse on speed figure, right? You could say he could regress off of that, but I mean he's still the fastest horse in the race.
Yes,
you know, all the mile eight races, he's the fastest.
And Bodie Meister has four races, guys, and the fact of the matter is we don't know how good he is. He don't even know how good he is. And so I like Mike's approach very much. What I don't like in this one is it just may not be the perfect pace setup for him, but who knows? If he's a monster, it won't matter. So that question was about Bodie Meister, but one of the comments I'd like to make about Pletcher's horses is I hate it when they don't come to Churchill to work out and try out have their workouts until at the last minute. And Jamala just may be a horse we're talking about for a long time here after this race. But I just don't like the fact that he didn't come up early and give him a chance to acclimate to the track.
Bob, John, I couldn't agree more. I think that horse he could be the best of all of them. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be down the road. I think that horse is going to improve over time. And I just think it's a little bit too much too soon. He gets a pace scenario that's even worse than the Wood Memorial, which I thought he did great in. And so I'm with you. He didn't get as bad as a negative report coming off the van as El Padrino, but it wasn't like a glowing, you know, this horse looks great kind of thing. So, I'll use him, but sparingly, you know, I think especially at the price he's going to be in.
All right. I have another question sent to my email inbox, and they're asking us to talk about Alpha. And my one answer here is that the one thing that I see about Alpha, and it gets back to a question from the same guy earlier who sent in the question about workouts. Alpha does have a bullet workout, best of 25, 59-2 at Belmont on April 28th, but they're not showing, and this gets back to what Bob said, there is no workout at Churchill. And that, to me, I've always preferred that they show up and at least have a work on the track. It's just my personal preference as a player and a handicapper.
Yeah, and Jeff, it's John. I mean, there's two other things. I mean, Dominguez gets off the horse, right? That's not a vote of confidence for me. And again, to Mike's point, you know, let's keep it simple. One of the best riders in the world gets off him. And second, if you look at, you know, you look at that Wood Memorial, you know, it looked like he should have blown right past the Chimologist. And you could have said, hey, they were both game. It was a tough race. But what really I noticed when he came up alongside Gemologist, he looked like his kid, he looked like his son. I mean, Gemologist just towered over him. So, you know, not to say little horses can't win big races like Little Current way back. If people don't remember, he's a tiny horse that won 2 out of 3 Triple Crown. But, I mean, physically he doesn't look like an adult compared to some of these guys in here. And so that's why I'm kind of negative on him. Those are two other things that I'm negative. And I agree with your point about the, you know, not working out over the track.
Alpha is a horse that I really wanted to like, because I love his father Bernardini, and he's bred to run all day. But I, for the same reasons John just mentioned, I just can't get past the wood and the jockey change. So I agree, John.
All right, I'm looking at our inbox. We have no other questions about the Derby. You guys want to move on to the next race?
Sure. One thing I want.
Jeff, go ahead, Dean. Just to stick on, because I think everybody has their favorite horse. If maybe the guys can spend, you know, 15 seconds each on a couple of the horses. We haven't really talked about Hansen, who's a favorite of a lot of people, and maybe if we can, you know, say a little bit about him or another couple horses would be kind of cool. Just a quick round.
All right.
Okay. This is Mike. I can hit Hansen real quick. I think the number one problem I have with betting Hansen tomorrow is just the pace scenario of the race. I think there's going to be so much speed, and there's other quality speed that, you know, I think he's a very nice horse, but I think he's compromised by the pace scenario. I think he got a great draw. I think the draw is, I think, you know, it came down to he and Daddy Longlegs. One of those two was going to get the rail. I was hoping Hansen would get the rail because I could totally eliminate him from everything and never have to use him any at all. And if he had the rail, but, you know, he bothers me a little in that he has the right post, but I think the pace scenario hurts him. And I think Tappet's out of a Sirkat mare, that doesn't scream a mile and a quarter to me either. So, you know, Tappet's a very nice sire, but if he has a weakness, that's his weakness. You know, will they really stay? And, you know, that would bother me also.
I just want to weigh in. I may be a little bit more positive on Hansen than Mike. I agree with him. I'm worried about the limitations, but, you know, just remembering the Breeders' Cup again, you know, he was against the bias that day. He dug in, and, you know, when a horse could run, and I watched that Keeneland race, and a horse could run a 135 going a mile eighth at Keeneland and still kind of, you know, running, you know, and that was a fast race. I know the track was fast that day, but this horse has got talent. And the race that really impressed me in his resume was the Gotham, where he was able to come from the 12 post. Granted, it was a weak field, but he showed a dimension there where he could rate. I'm not saying, you know, like that, you know, that in the last quarter of a mile he's going to be compromised. But, I mean, I think he can hang in there. And if the track, you know, comes up a little wet and you have to seal it or something like that, then watch out. You know, he can pull a Smarty Jones on this field.
Right.
I wonder how much difference not getting his tail blue is going to make.
Well, that freaked him out last week, right? I mean, that really freaked him out. That was a mistake.
I think it makes a big difference because he's going to scare everybody behind him.
And maybe a couple of quick things on Al Havanagar starting from way out there. Any thoughts on him? He was a well-bet horse in the futures.
Who's that?
I'll have another.
I I'm a California guy, you know, and I just think when you think about, when we talk about pace scenario, you know, this horse likes to kind of run up close, and he's going to be nowhere near up close in this race. And so, you know, when you take a horse completely out of his running style, that to say, you know, he can't adapt, but that's asking a lot. And, you know, when you get shuffled back and you're, you know, in a field of 20 horses and, you know, all the surroundings are new, I think that's a tough order for that horse. And that's why I'm kind of, you know, that race, race was kind of a slow pace. And I just don't think the flow is going to help this horse. I don't think it suits his style. So, you know, it's just like boxers, guys. You know, there's great boxers like Muhammad Ali, but when he fought a guy like Joe Frazier, who he was better than, he had problems with him just because the styles didn't match up. Well, when he fought, you know, when he fought other guys, he was able to, you know, knock them out like, you know, a big hitter like a Liston or George Foreman because, you know, it was just a better style suit for Ali. I think it's the same thing with horses, you know. It's just, you know, sometimes you could run these races over and over again and say, wow, how could this horse win this time and this horse win the other time? It's style. And the great horses have adaptable style. And that's why I think, you know, some of the ones that we've discussed here who can kind of run close up or behind a warm pace are the ones. And that's why I think I keep on coming back to Creative Claws, because I don't think he's he can run close up to a hot pace or a slow pace. I don't think it matters.
Saber Cat has not been mentioned, but I just came to my own conclusion that the race would have to set up perfect, and I just think I think there's other closers in the race that are just better than he is.
Bob, I agree. I mean, it's John. He's I don't think he's that good of a closer, and I don't think he's, you know, I don't think he's wants 10 furlongs, but that could be wrong. But I'll tell you one thing. I did get information on him, and the guy that basically follows these horses said that out of all the horses, he looked the best, according to him. This guy's got a real sharp eye for horses, and he just thinks that he did everything right. Now, that doesn't, you know, necessarily translate that he's going to win this race, but just from, you know, physically and his mind and how he's acting, he's looking great. So if you want to, like, use something like him to round out some supers and tries, that might be something. That's just some information you can use.
All right, we have a question on ticket structure. And it doesn't specify a pool. It just says ticket structure,
okay.
?
Just basic ticket structure. This is Mike. I will say I'll maybe let one of the other guys address the horizontal stuff. In the vertical bets, the exactas, the tries, the supers, the super high fives, the thing that I constantly push myself to do is to have an opinion on a horse and say that horse must do something. You know, he must run first. He must run first or second. He must run first, second, or third. And when you do that, you know, I see a lot of people that want to use three horses in first, and then four horses in second, and five horses in third, and that kind of deal. And you just you're diluting your buying power. You know, the power of your bankroll is so diluted, you know, with the tickets that you can buy. You know, and instead of having a $5 trifecta, if you're right, you're going to have a $1 trifecta. And, you know, in the long run of racing, you can't be right all the time. You need to get paid when you're right. So the way I approach ticket structure is that, you know, I commit to something. I say, you know, this horse will do a certain thing. Like in today's racing, for instance, you know, this is not being a genius, but Stephanie's Kitten looked like an absolute cinch to me. So, you know, I used her on top and didn't put anybody, you know, in first other than her, just locked her into the first slot, totally singled her, and then worked in a maze of horses underneath there who I thought could run second, who I thought could run third, and it was kind of a caveman-type superfecta ticket, but, it worked. The superfecta paid, you know, as I'm remembering, like $3,000 for a buck, and you can use a lot of horses you know, for $3,000 under a single. So, when you do things like that, it just gives you much more power, much more oomph in your betting. And sure, you feel bad when your second, third, and fourth choices run 1, 2, 3, and if you would have been boxing 4, you would have had that. But you have to give up something with any approach. And I think, at least in my mind, that's the mistake I see most people make, is they don't commit to a certain horse having to do, you know, a certain thing.
In other words, have an opinion and back it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I usually, if I've got enough money in the bank, I just hit the all button. But actually, what I do in the Derby and some races on Derby Day is I think this type of horse is called a wise guy horse, but I try to pick a horse that is going to hit the board. And that horse for me in the Derby is Daddy Knows Best. And then I try to place with him. I'll play him in the try. I'll play him in first, second, and third. And what I'll play in the other positions are the three best early horses and the three best late horses. That's nothing scientific about it, but it worked 10 years ago. It hasn't worked since, so maybe I should try something different. But I like to. The Derby basically is just the most unique race I guess any of us ever play, I feel like that the payoff is good enough that you can, you know, I'm spending $60 or $120 on a trifecta playing him in three places, but the trifecta is liable to pay $5,000 or $6,000. So that's what I do on Derby. I don't do that on other races, but that's what I do on the Derby.
Yeah, this is John. I mean, I play the horizontal wages mainly. You know, like I said, I'll sprinkle win, and I'll bet they're trying that. And I say I just don't play the level that Mike and Bob play in those pools. And like Mike was saying, you have to combine strategy with the way you structure your tickets. You know, I love the way he talked about two different scenarios in the Derby, and you have to look at that as you're putting together tickets. And you know, I guess the thing that I look at, the first thing I look at when I'm going to play anything is, you know, what's the average payout, right? So I can understand what a base bet I might want to make. So if the average payout is low, I don't want to go that, you know, heavy into it. So I try to understand the pools I'm playing into, and I'll go up on the track and see what their average payout is for a pick 4, pick 5, and then I'll, you know, kind of bet accordingly. But there's three things I try to do. One, you know, I'm trying to beat the favorites. And you can't beat every favorite, but if I look at a pick 4 and I can't beat 3 of the favorites, I pass. I have to beat at least 3 favorites. And also, I never want an odds on in that mix. I rarely, unless it's a big day like, you know, the Breeders' Cup where I'm going to get a big payout. But usually my normal plays, I kind of pass. You want a strong horse you can key on, to Mike's point. And then you want at least, one or two horses over 10-1 that have very good chance of winning. And the way I structure my bets, I use Ticket Maker. I've been using this even before Ticket Maker came out. A guy by the name of Barry Meadow, who's one of the guys here at Hanna, one of our a guy that puts our newsletter there, just a brilliant guy, I think. And he did a lot of work that Steve Chris kind of picked up. And if you guys get a chance, look at exotic betting. If you want to look at how to structure some of your horizontal bets, I think that's a good book for doing that. So I've been following a lot of that. You know, I'll improvise, but basically a lot of that I picked up from really good, smart people.
That's some good advice there. I've always looked at the horizontals for me. I play them in a unique way. I look at them as an extension of a win bet. If I like a horse and I have a solid opinion on it, I'll have that horse to win, and he has to do something. He has to win the race in order for me to get paid. But in addition to the win bet, I'll look at the if they have rolling doubles, and I'll look at the pick 3 or the pick 4, and I'll single that horse in its leg of that multi-race bet. And then I'll try and tie that horse up with other horses in the other legs that I see as logical. And looking back, there's so many times where if you do a dollar for dollar comparison, you can turn a $10 winner into a $16 or $17 winner if you do a good job of handicapping the other legs of that multi-race exotic. And if favorites don't manage to win, don't manage to sweep those other three legs. So, you know, my way is I'm looking for a horse to do something, like Mike says. For me, the horse has to win the race for me to get paid. And then I have to be able to catch the other legs of a pick three or a pick four. And it can work out very nicely, especially on a day like tomorrow, when there's big fields and there's a lot of casual money in those pools. All right. Anything else about the Derby? If not, let's go to race 12. We're looking at an allowance race, 6.5 furlongs.
Jeff, this is Mike. I didn't have much of an opinion here, so I had a little opinion in the 13th, so I'll wait for that one.
Okay.
This is John. This is a tough race. You know, I'm going to kind of spread it, but I think I'm going to, at least with some tickets, key on number 7, Night Vision. I think this horse has been running in faster races, even though, it may be a little bit hidden here. I mean, I think the paces of those races have been faster, and even though he hasn't been keeping up, I think he gets a softer bunch. And if you look at his race on, a dirt fast track, it's pretty good. I mean, he's 8 of 10 in the money, I just think that he's going to be a price, and I just think he's just a good candidate to hit the board or even win at a pretty generous price, because the field is kind of suspect. I mean, even some of the good horses in this race are a little bit iffy in terms of their records and win records and so forth. Number 7, Night Vision, I kind of would look at.
All right, this is Jeff. I looked this race over, and I looked it over hard, and I just couldn't land on anything. So for me, the race is a pass.
I didn't look at it very hard, to be truthful with you, but there is a chance of catching a little bit of a price, depending. It just depends on a lot of factors on the – after the Derby, how much people are betting and stuff, of course. But I kind of like at a price, I kind of like Night Vision, number 7. It's a presser, which tends to do well at this distance, and has certainly ran races in the past that would put him right there with these. So that would be my only... basically, for a price, he's 10 to 1 morning line.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. Thanks, John.
All right, moving on to race 13.
The 13th, this is Mike. I had a little opinion in here, not anything fantastic, but maybe interesting to someone. I saw 3 horses that interested me in the 13th, and probably the one that I'm the most confident in is the 5-horse Parabellum. Tom Amos is the trainer. The horse has shown that it can handle dirt. It's shown that it can handle turf. He's shown he can sprint. He's shown that he can go long. I think the one-turn mile here will be a nice fit for this horse. He'll get to settle into stride. Sometimes these closing types can do better at a one-turn mile at Churchill. It's
you know, they can get settled and make a nice run. And Amos is very, very tough at Churchill at this meet. So I would have confidence in the five horse. There's two other horses in there that I would include in my exotic wagers. One would be the one entry, the Mark Cassie entry of Dynamical and 1A Moon Traveler. I think both those horses are live. Cassie's horses are running well here this meet. Both horses are training fairly well over the track. So I think they should give a decent performance. And the horse that may be hiding in there a little bit would be the 3 Grand Contender. I think he may be more of a horse to fill out the bottom of exactas or tries or even a super. But I have trip notes on the horse last time that he was out very well past the wire in the 5.5 furlong race at Fairgrounds. And I think that's significant. Now he's stretching out to a mile. His pedigree suggests that would be favorable for him. Al Stahl goes for Gomez here and gives the horse several sharp works over the track. I think at an 8-1 morning line, the 3 Grand Contender will show some value. So I'm going to mix the three of those horses together in exactas, tries, and supers, and hope that I can catch something.
All right, Mike, I actually concur with you on the 3 horse. I have a little spot play that picked the 3 horse out. Looking at my trip notes, I show that he did gallop out well past the wire. But the other thing that I come back to is he's a 4-year-old, and he's facing quite a few 3-year-olds in here. And I think we're still a little bit early in the year to where 3-year-olds can get the upper hand on a 4-year-old for the most part, just as a general type of handicapping thing.
You're saying a 3-year-old should get the hand on a 4-year-old?
No. It's rare this time of year. I think we're still a little too early in the year for a 3-year-old to be able to get the upper hand on a 4-year-old.
I that's good information on the gallop out, guys. I did not have that. So, John, I can't disagree with what Mike's saying. The only thing I would take a look at, though, is the 2. If that thermal cat comes back and runs a huge race again, the number 2 came out of that race and, already looked like the place horse won coming out of that race. And that was his first race, and he just got annihilated. Everyone did get annihilated by that thermal cat. So, and he's getting blinkers on this time, so maybe just somebody to consider. And then the other one that I looked at that was a little interesting to me was Nicholas Way. I don't think this race has any kind of speed. And this horse doesn't have speed either, you know. He's been on the turf. He's run decent numbers. And then they put the blinkers on him, and he just fired a bullet. So I'm wondering if they're going to send this horse and, you know, with the route races behind him, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe he can stick. And I had a good trip note on the 22nd on him. He made a middle move, and he was on hold a lot of the race because he was in traffic. And it was a subtle effort. You know, these are trip notes that I really hold valuable. And he didn't run back and run well, really, after that. But, you know, maybe, you know, turf wasn't what he wanted. And, with the blinkers on, he's, like you said, he's fired a couple of nice workouts. Ian Wilkes looks like he started the meet off pretty good. And I would just take over that one, too.
I really don't have anything more to add. Number 5 Parabellum, I totally agree with Mike. I think I think his time is coming real soon to break his maiden. The only horse that interests me as far as a long shot, a little bit, and it's a long shot, so you should get some odds on him, is the 6 Courtroom Drama. He's had 4 races and has not done a whole lot, but I do like the fact that he is dropping down a little bit. No, actually, he's not dropping down. Pardon me on that. I think I got the wrong horse here. Let me take another look at my notes here. No, that's him. I don't know why I like him. Forget that. I think I got on the wrong race here.
All right. I'm looking at our mailbox. We have no further questions. Any other thoughts about the card itself or tomorrow?
This is Mike. I would just give a quick some free advice, which may be about what it's worth. I don't know. But on big days like this, it's easy to get too involved too early in the card and kind of handicap yourself to where you lose too much of your if you're not right the first couple of races. If you get knocked out of an early pick three or pick four, you kind of hinder your chances for the rest of the day. I always feel that a good handicapper, an observant handicapper, the kind of people that take an hour and a half the night before the Derby to listen to a call like this, that those people are better on the second half of a card than they are on the first half of a card. That if you're really trying and you're really observing, that you're going to pick some things up about, you know, how the track's playing, what horses shipping from what venue are doing better, you know, what trainers, horses seem to be running well, what jockey's hot today. Things like that we pick up that give us an advantage in the later races. So I think it's worth noting that if a person can be cautious early in the card, protect that bankroll, you know, don't be afraid to bet something if you really have a strong conviction, but try to conserve those bullets for later in the day when you might have a better opinion. And good luck to everybody.
Very good advice there.
Let me try to redeem myself on that last snafu. It was the number three horse. I've got a bunch of notes here, and I just got mixed up on it. But it was a three horse that I feel like has a chance at a decent price in the last race.
This is John. I would just say that play to your strengths. You know, we've talked about lots of different bets here, but if you're a trifecta better, an exacta better, and that's what you do well, don't try to exchange it overnight. Play to your strengths. The pools are all going to be good. You're going to make money no matter what. And it's not, you know, it's not bad to take, you know, 5, 10, and 20 to 1 on win bets. You know, so play to your strengths and enjoy the day. And to Mike's point, don't go crazy early. And don't even go crazy late. There's the opportunity. But make sure in the race that you're really trying to play, you have an edge, at least an edge in your mind, a perceived edge. Because that's the way you beat this game. You need an edge. And so hopefully we provided something for you, and hopefully we didn't take you off course. Stay on course. If you had a strong opinion that was different from ours, don't change it. Okay? Stick with your opinion. Use this information, but don't necessarily make you take it off of your opinion.
All right. This is Jeff. I want to thank everybody for dialing in and listening to what we have to say. And I want to thank Mike, John, and Bob for donating their time and being on this call.
Well, thank you for asking me. This is Bob, and I want to thank you for bringing about the opportunity for us horse players to have a voice in the industry, and it's much appreciated.
You're welcome. All right, with that, I'm going to hit star 3, which will end this call, and I wish everyone good night.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, we off record now?
I didn't hear it say that, Bill, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll assume we're off the call. Yeah, Ralph said he was recording this. I'm going to try to get a hold of him and see if we have a usable file. It's going to be a big one anyway. I don't know whether we have time to break it up or not. But anyway, we need to get out the information on where the playback is, how to get to the playback, and so forth. Maybe can you handle that, Charlie?
Yeah, I already posted it. I'll post it again.
Okay.
Guys, it's John. I'm on the call. I just wanted to.
Oh, hey,
John. Did you guys kind of listen? How did it go, in your opinion? And how many people did we have on the call?
The attendance was disappointing.
What was it?
We only peaked at 18 people.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow. our typical experience is that Hannah members don't participate much in anything. We've found the same thing at live events, you know, come out and see us at Keeneland, that type of thing. So this isn't too awful surprising. Maybe I underestimated the free phone thing like you did, Charlie. You know, I've had a free long distance, nights and weekends free. It doesn't even count minutes for me on my cell phone, you know, this time of night.
I didn't know people still paid for long distance, but oh well.
Yeah.
Well, that's disappointing, but the better thing to know is that it's only 18 of us that know all that information, so.
Yeah. Well, I hope it was helpful. All right, guys.
No,
good
it was.
Night. Good. Yeah, good. All right, guys. Good night. Thanks a lot.
I thought it was a great discussion. There were a few comments on Pace Advantage saying, hey, you know, this is stuff that I've, you know, I very rarely hear, and it's great to hear. So, you know, the people listening, we're really appreciating it. We're going to get out the playback and see if we could track how many playbacks occur and so forth. So we'll
maybe we get to do a little bit more.